We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
So who do I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Friday to you. And it is the TGIF Final Descent to Game Day. October 11 edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports. Ready to roll on 1037 The Game for the next 2.5 hours. Ben Love, alongside the famous Clint D, we're going to take you home on this beautiful Friday, and it's going to be a glorious football weekend in South Louisiana. Typically, I give you my guest list at the end of the first segment these days. I'm coming right out the chute and letting you know the goods that we're bringing on this LSU Florida Football Friday at 4:15, as in 12 minutes from now. Jacob Hester, Mr. Fourth Down, when it comes to LSU Florida, invades B2BS. At straight up 5 o'clock, we're going to raise you an LSU National Championship running back with another. He joins the program every single Friday, Justin Vincent. And then at 5:45, well, he didn't play running back and he didn't play for LSU, but he knows all about the Saints. Sharif Ishak, what's the latest with Alvin Kamara's ankle? We got a big program today. And then football night in Acadiana, pregame style from 6 to 6:30. As you would imagine, of course we're leading off with LSU Florida. And what makes Tiger Nation and the home field advantage at Death Valley so formidable? Why don't we ask Desmond Howard?
Well, they started drinking brown liquor much earlier than other fans, especially when they tailgate. Yeah. So that's a very unfair advantage for LSU fans.
Okay, that's just true. All right, none of us should hide behind that. Let's all just own that and embrace that. Well, they just start drinking brown liquor a lot earlier. When you're right, you're right. And Desmond Howard, go ahead and strike a Heisman pose on that answer. That was perfect. Nailed that like a split hog. Now, as to what makes LSU 14-point favorites in a rivalry game like this, what makes that even more appropriate? Boy, LSU suddenly seems healthier than they've been in the last month plus, maybe, just maybe, the healthiest that Ed Orgeron's group has been all season long. And some of this news I'm about to share with you, there are a number of bullet points. So grab you a sip or two, maybe some popcorn. It's amazing how LSU is rounding into health just leading into this game. Maybe some gamesmanship on the part of Orgeron and company, or more likely, guys that have just been out, they've been taking their time to get back to be ready for this moment. I think we're finally able to co-sign the fact that a lot of these guys will play. But LSU, from a MASH unit to this, Rashard Lawrence and Michael Divinity, according to Coach O, likely to play. Divinity, of the two, is closer to starting the ball game, but both should be back and play significant time. Speaking of the defense, Caleb Von Chason, he's good to go. We already knew that. And so the Tigers' best natural pass rusher has a chance to get out there and do his thing against an O-line that even the Gators beat writers would tell you is struggling these days. Staying with the defense, Glenn Logan. This hasn't been corroborated by the team, but on Twitter, the former Destrehan High standout on LSU's D-line, he declared himself back. Almost a Slim Shady type of thing. Guess who's back? The tweet from Glenn Logan. He's referring to himself. We'll stay on the defensive side. Ed Orgeron saying last night, or the night prior, I should say, on his radio show, that Cordell Flott has made a quote-unquote miraculous recovery, and LSU's third corner, he occupies that role a lot these days, may well play. It was thought that Flott might be out until Mississippi State or Auburn. Suddenly, there's a chance that the freshman from the state of Alabama might play tomorrow night in Tiger Stadium. That would be big. Why? It enables Christian Fulton to slide back down into that nickel spot when they need him. And so in your nickel, maybe even your dime situations, when it's third and long, you can rely on Fulton inside, Flott on the outside, and not have to get into some permutations that involve Kerry Vincent Jr., which frankly haven't worked out as well this year. And finally, along the offensive line, this is a problem that you have when everybody's finally healthy. Oh, Coach O saying last night that Adrian McGee will start at left guard, but that Ed Ingram is ready to roll, is behind him, and will play. And so I've been telling you all week, Ed Ingram, Sadiq Charles, that's the left side of the line James Craig has been waiting on. Looks like they'll have it when they want it, but that McGee maybe even, for precautionary reasons, will start the ballgame at left guard, and they'll ease Ingram back in. We started with the LSU-Florida Hate Week talk on Monday, started to reach a fever pitch Tuesday, Wednesday. I think now everybody's just ready for some football. LSU, healthy. I mean, seriously, as well off as they've been maybe all season long. I understand that Terrace Marshall Jr. won't play on the outside at wide receiver. I know that they've lost a safety this year in Todd Harris that they'd love to have back there for depth purposes. But just about all the other major players are ready to roll. Tigers going in as just about two touchdown favorites against Florida. The game starts at 7. As Desmond Howard said, you get your brown liquor in early. It's going to be an awfully big time tomorrow night and all day tomorrow in Baton Rouge. You want to call us and talk about it? We got a few more moments left in this segment. 706-0111. And something else to consider. Kudos to Wilson Alexander of the Baton Rouge Advocate. LSU brings into this game the number one red zone offense in America. Not the SEC, all of the NC2A. Of course, on the flip side, Florida has the number one red zone defense in the country. So how will you perform when it gets tight? The last time these two played in Tiger Stadium, this part you may want to earmuff, but you probably remember it. Darius Geis takes the toss sweep the wrong way. LSU, an incredibly frustrating game. That was the interim season for Ed Orgeron. That was Steve Slinger, reminding everybody, look at what I can do when I have the reins of this offense. And they set records against Southern Miss and Mizzou. People forget LSU had 500-plus yards in that loss to Florida. But they stalled out time and again from inside the 20. And so what's going to give? Number one red zone offense in the country versus the number one red zone defense in the country. I have very little hesitation in telling you that LSU is going to move the football at will tomorrow night. But what happens when it gets tight? Marshall gave you a nice red zone option. Who else can they go to? Is it time for Stephon Sullivan? Time for some of the others to step up. Racy McMath, see what they can do. Thaddeus Moss. Ed Orgeron has said all week long that after Moss scored his first touchdown last week against Utah State, they want to continue to integrate him more and more. And so what are you going to do when you get into the red zone? And is it time for one of the backs not named Clyde Edwards-Helaire to really break out? I know that our guy Glenn Gilbo with the Daily Advertiser is saying this might just be the occasion for John Emery Jr. And it seems like Emery, at least based on that Utah State game, might have first dibs as RB2 over fellow freshman Ty Davis Price. So many factors that go into this. But at the end of the day and at the end of tomorrow night, it always comes down in this series to who wants it more. On the other side of this break, don't know that anybody has ever wanted it more than Jacob Hester did in 2007, late night, inside Tiger Stadium. We're going to ask him all about that game and get him to break down this one as well. Jacob Hester, when we return, Justin Vincent at 5 o'clock. We know how to roll on a football Friday. So after a brief timeout, we'll be right back with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
You say tomato, I say tomato. The famous Clint D says something that none of us will agree with. Back to more top shelf analysis for your drive home. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Third and goal at the 2.5. Flynn under center. Hester straight ahead. He is in for the score!
Arguably the best game ever played in Tiger Stadium. Of course, that's Jacob Hester in 2007. And now it's time to bring Jacob Hester aboard the program here in 2019. He's aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Jacob, first off, it's great to have you back. Second, does a day go by in your life when that game doesn't come up?
I know what's going on, man? It's always good to catch up with you. It's one of those games where everybody kind of remembers where they were, and so it's so cool for me, and it's an honor for me to be able to be a small part of that game and to hear those stories and to hear the people say, you know, they were in the south end zone or what section they were in during the game, because it was such a great moment in Tiger Stadium. We all remember USC losing to Stanford as a 41-point favorite. That gets announced in the third quarter. The place goes wild. It was the height of Tebow time. They were up 17-7. All the fourth down conversions in that game is something that I'm very fortunate to have a part in.
I know you've told this story time and again, but give us a general feel. How much input did you have on some of those decisions to go, and then in particular, what the call was going to be?
Well, really on that last drive for us offensively, which lasted 8 minutes, it's hard to have a drive last that long when you only have to go 60 yards to score. You get the ball on the 40-yard line there. It was a unique drive. But I remember telling Coach Miles before that, hey, these guys are tired. Florida kind of had their hands on their knees, had their hands on their hips, and they looked gassed when they came out on the field. So, you know, I don't know if that had anything to do with Coach Miles calling those fourth downs, but I'm sure glad that he did. And I'm sure a lot of it had to do with, hey, you don't really want to give the ball back to Tim Tebow, the Heisman Trophy winner that year, and that offense, Percy Harvin, Malik Jordan, the list of names they had on that team. And so I'm sure that had something to do with it as well. But, you know, one of the things I always kind of, you know, forget when I'm going over that drive is we faced a third and 16. We had an offensive pass interference from Jared Mitchell early in that drive, and Flynn scampers for 15 yards, almost picks up the first down, and that's where the first fourth down conversion came from, right there around midfield, 7 minutes left in the game. And it was a scenario where it takes some, you know what, to call that as a head coach, to know if you don't get it with Tebow in an offense, they're going to get points somehow, some way. It might not be a touchdown. They were at least getting a field goal out of that drive, and we're already down a field goal, down 24-21. But we're able to convert and just kind of keep moving the ball down the field slowly but surely. We had a couple of big plays. Richard Dixon catches one over the middle. I was able to get an 18, 19-yard run. And then we had another fourth down conversion. Then we score on the goal line there on the third down. And all of them were the same plays. It was a low power play. And I've told you this story before. The only time I've been in a huddle in football history, you know, 25 years of playing football, where the quarterback didn't call a play. Matt came in the huddle. He said, you know what it is, line up and score. And we all knew. We knew it was low power. We knew which way we were running. We knew Herman Johnson was going to be the puller. And very fortunate to get in the end zone there.
It doesn't get old, brother. I know you're a young man still, but that story, it's going to age well through your lifetime. I promise you that. Jacob Hester, our guest, host of Hanging with Hester Radio across different parts of Louisiana. What makes LSU Florida different maybe than other rivalries that LSU's involved in, and what makes this one special?
You know, for me, and I know it depends on who you ask, Ben, you know this, if you ask an older LSU fan, they'll say, you know, maybe Tulane or Ole Miss or one of those schools, and there's people now that if you ask them who's LSU's rival, they'll probably say Alabama, because that's a hurdle LSU's still trying to get over, right? But for me, it's Florida, and it's only the Florida Gators. That's who I consider LSU's rival. When I was in school, that was always the best games. And you're talking about three national championships between the two teams in a three-year span. And there's just no love lost between the two schools. Look, they hate us, we hate them, that kind of deal. And it's one of those games, there's always some extracurricular stuff going on underneath the piles before the game. And, you know, current players, former players, it doesn't matter. This game always brings out a little pettiness between the two schools, and it's just, you know, bad blood. And that's what college football sometimes is about. It's about those games and those rivalries that you have that means just a little bit more.
I'm glad you brought that up. Has it surprised you at all that both of these coaching staffs, especially here on this side, that they've kind of not only allowed this but maybe enabled it? Typically, and you know this, the coaches say, look, keep the bulletin board material out of your mouth. I don't think anybody cares that these kids are saying, we hate you, you hate us, let's do it.
Yeah, look, I kind of like that. Honestly, I do. And I know that's maybe not the answer that I typically would give, but I think that we all know it, so why try to hide it? I mean, we know the history between these two schools. We know that, you know, there's been bad blood on and off the field. We know that, you know, LSU's played in Gainesville back-to-back years. They had to come to Baton Rouge because of a hurricane, and there was back and forth between that. There's even the stuff on the baseball diamond and the basketball court. I mean, it's not only football, in my opinion. There's been stuff happening between these two schools. And so, look, you know it's out there. You know it's factual, so why try to hide it? Actually, I've kind of enjoyed it this week, the back and forth, because I think that when you kick it off on Saturday night here tomorrow in Tiger Stadium, you're going to see that bad blood from the first play.
Yeah, you're not the only one enjoying it. We got some more time with Jacob Hester on 103.7 The Game. LSU's defense a bit overshadowed, I think, with the way the offense is playing, with all the guys getting healthy. And we've learned in the last 48 hours, Jacob, I mean, Chaseaum, Lawrence, Divinity, Flott, maybe even Logan. Can they look a little bit more like the Dave Aranda unit that we're used to against Kyle Trask in Florida?
Yeah, it's so big getting those guys back, as you mentioned. And, you know, each one of them is going to bring something different to the LSU defense. Rashard Lawrence is a guy that gives you pressure from the middle of your defense, which is going to be important with Kyle Trask having that sprained MCL, not allowing him to be able to step up in the pocket. Because when you have that sprained MCL, it's very, very tough to go laterally. And so that's what you want to force him to do in this matchup. And if you can get 10 plays out of Glenn Logan, that's gigantic. Chaseaum plays against Utah State, get some plays under his belt. Now you expect him to take that next step here against Florida. Cordell Flott would be huge, obviously, because then you can do some more things with the nickel position between Christian Fulton and Kerry Vincent. So each guy kind of has his own deal that would help the LSU defense if he can come back. Last time out, the LSU defense was, you know, really good. Utah State's a team that, when you look at their other ranked game they had this year against Wake Forest, they had almost 600 total yards. They only had 159 total yards against LSU. And Jordan Love will play a long time on Sundays, and he threw three interceptions. You had 18 missed tackles against Vanderbilt. You only had four against Utah State. And if Utah State was playing Vanderbilt, Utah State would be favored in that matchup. And so the competition actually went up a level, in my opinion. And so the defense got back on track last week. The offense helped them out by controlling the ball, 41 minutes to 19 when you look at the time of possession. But I thought the defense got a little bit of their swagger back, getting those interceptions off Jordan Love. Now we'll see, can that translate to Florida, who I expect to try and run the football, churn some of that clock so you keep LSU's offense off the field.
Let's get to your position for LSU running back. How big of a factor do you expect the Tigers' running game will be? And do you sense that Emory is starting to get a little bit of a lead on the RB2 position?
That's kind of a key for mine. You know, which one of those young guys is going to take over that position? And it's a deal where I know Emory's a home run hitter, and you can definitely see it. It's getting close. But I think Tadavis Price as well gives you a 7-yard run that if it's there, he's going to take it, which is key for a young running back. And so I think they bring something different. It might be a combination of those two backs. You know, Emory with the dynamic home run ability, Tadavis Price, knowing that he's going to keep you on schedule. And I was impressed with both of them last week because they need somebody behind Clyde. Clyde has been so good for LSU football this year, but as y'all know, you need a 1B to go along with him because that's just the way college football works now. And Clyde's done such a fantastic job of breaking tackles. He's broken a tackle on 66% of his carries this year, averages over 40 yards after contact, leads the SEC in broken tackles. So he's been really, really good. But you want to be able to have that change of pace back because neither one of the other backs is like Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And they also got to step up in pass protection. Clyde can't be the only guy that you can count on because you don't want to get into tendencies. The last thing you want to do is for a defensive coordinator to know, okay, when 4 and 3 are in the game, it's either going to be a run or they're going to be free release. They have no protection responsibilities because then he can scheme off of that. And so that's going to be LSU's challenge to make sure that when those guys are in there, they just have to count on them. You have to say, hey, you're a freshman. You're not a freshman anymore after this game. This game starts your sophomore year, basically, okay? Because we need you to play like a sophomore. You can't have freshman mistakes. And I think that's something that you could see possibly this game.
Let's get you out of here, Jacob, with this. We'll stick with LSU's offense. Understandably, if Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson are open, that's where Burrow wants to go. Even if they're not, those guys can make plays. If he has to look elsewhere, where do you think he's starting to develop the most comfort?
I think he's got a rapport with Derek Gillen from last year. I mean, we all remember the big play against Auburn. That was the game changer there, the big touchdown pass over the middle of the field. So he's already got that in place. It's a shame Terrace Marshall can't play in this game because he had really started to create something with Terrace Marshall I mean, he was leading the country in touchdowns when he got hurt leading into the Vanderbilt game. And so you want to get him back as soon as possible. But you do have guys like Derek Dillon, like I mentioned, Stephon Solgren, someone that Joe's done a lot of passes to. Racy McNabb is another name to watch. Joe hasn't had, you know, a lot of time with him on the field, but they did have some moments in training camp. And so that's the challenge now, right? One of your guys is out. You've got to hurry up and find that other option, that third guy, because that's always going to be a matchup in football, right? Their third corner against your third receiver. Which one can win out? And Derek Dillon's had moments in an LSU uniform. We'll see if it can be him.
You know, it's funny. Time just flies. At the time that you were playing in that game, Stanford was being coached by Jim Harbaugh. Since he has gone and played in the Super Bowl with the 49ers, now he's coaching Michigan. What the hell's going on?
No, you're exactly right. And I'll tell you one even more. I believe when I was with the Chargers, I want to say Harbaugh was coaching at San Diego University. And at right before that moment, right? So right before he gets to Stanford, he's coaching at San Diego University. And I start to hear those stories of when he was coaching there from my time with San Diego. And, of course, he was with Stanford at that moment. And then San Francisco played against him when he was the 49ers head coach. And, man, Tom, you're exactly right. It does fly. I cannot believe that it's been 12 years since we played that fourth down game against Florida in 2007.
That's wild, man. And I can tell you this. I don't know that we'll have that type of excitement generated tomorrow night, but I think that place will be on fire. Jacob, looking forward to it. Thank you for the time.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure. Anytime you need me.
That's the great Jacob Hester. And not just great with what he did on the field, right? NFL career, Chargers, Broncos. The man is putting in work as well. Radio up in Shreveport, locking down the Port City. Does some great things in South Louisiana as well. Great to have him on this side of the basin. On the other side of our break, it's Friday, baby. Sink or swim means over-unders. We got a lot coming at you. So after this brief timeout, we'll be back with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
One of them is famous in Cajun country. The other has a set of pipes that never quits. Seriously, we've tried before. Together, Ben and Clint bring you home on 103.7 The Game.
Back in, and wasn't that fun? I love not just going down memory lane, but I love talking shop with Jacob Hester, especially when it comes to LSU, even more so when it comes to LSU, Florida. So our thanks again to an all-time LSU great, a guy who certainly wore that number 18. All right, for the next half hour, we've got time for you. I want to update something briefly on the Stros, and then we'll dive into our weekly over-unders, your sink or swim questions of the day. Whatever your pleasure, call us up. Let's have some fun on a football Friday. 706-0111. Stros do win last night. Advanced to the ALCS third straight year. Hinch and company have been there. And I'll leave this and kind of park it because I want you to think about it before our final segment of the 4 o'clock hour. Hinch has announced his rotation. It will be Greinke, Verlander, Cole, and then TBA for game 4. I'm a little surprised by that, pleasantly surprised. So, again, I'll have more on that on the other side of our next break. Just wanted to get the wheels turning for you. Saturday, Sunday, Stros, Yanks will be at Minute Maid after a travel day Tuesday. On Monday, travel day, Tuesday, they play the first of a few games in the Bronx. So let's take that baseball, that knowledge, stow it away. We'll return. All right, CD, let's get some music, and I want to get down to business. I've got some today that I think we can legitimately go either way on.
Exciting and new.
Technically speaking, 2 over-unders, and then more of the normal SOS sink or swim variety. Let's get to part 1 for your over-unders. Joe Burrow, 350 yards passing in this game. 350. Does Joe Burbank hit the number? Let's get to over-under number 2, and it's the actual over-under for the game. I'm very interested in pace for this one. Where and how you think this one's going to be played? 55.5 points is the actual over-under last I checked. Will they go over or under combined? And sink or swim part 3, who will be LSU's defensive MVP for this game. You just heard on the other side, Jacob Pester alluding to a lot of the guys coming back from injury. I think we've gotten a pretty heavy dosage as this week progresses of people saying, this is the week LSU's defense has to do its part and help Joe Burrow get to victory lane. All right, fine. Who's going to be the biggest cog in that defensive machine? So, again, Joe Burrow, does he hit 350 passing? The actual over-under, 55.5, which way are you leaning? And then who will be LSU's defensive MVP? 706-0111. Clint, lead us off.
I'm going to go over on Joe Burrow, 350 yards passing. I wouldn't be surprised if he hits around 375. I feel like that's going to be where Joe Burrow's range is going to be at in this one and probably in several of the SEC matchups outside of the big one in T-Town. And then for the second one, over-under. I'm going over, and this one will be very, very tough. I feel like if it winds up getting over, I think this could wind up possibly being a rout in favor of LSU. I wouldn't be surprised, though, if it winds up being competitive. But for me, I'm going on the over. The final one, LSU's defensive MVP of the game. You brought up injured players, as what Jacob Pester alluded to. I'm going a little oppo there and going with Derek Stingley. He's going to have a big ball game going up against a freshman in Kyle Trask. He's going to wind up making some of those wide receivers look silly.
Stingley, you could argue, has been their best defensive player through five games this season. Certainly not a bad pick. I'm going to give you my selections. Again, I want some input here, so holler at us while you can. We got a lot happening today. We're going to talk Astros to end this hour. Justin Vincent hopping aboard at 5 o'clock, so call us now. 706-0111. I'm going over, Clint, for Joe Burrow, but it is going to be awfully close. For what it's worth, his season average, a shade under 373 yards a game. I will go over 350 with this caveat. I feel strongly LSU is going to have to rely on the run in this one, at least more so than any other game to date in the 2019 season. And I also agree with Jacob Pester. It's going to have to be more than number 22. You're going to have to get contributions out of your freshman. I don't know that it's fair to expect much out of Chris Curry at this point. And so it's all on Emory Jr. It's on Davis Price. Which one, maybe even both of you, are ready to step to the forefront in a huge game setting? I mean, it was almost all Edwards-Helaire the last time LSU had a game of this magnitude in Austin. Same type of stage, this one at home. Who's ready to come to play? So I think Burrow goes over 350, but the run game is going to have to be a huge piece of this puzzle. I will go under for the actual over-under. And you want my game score? Fine, I'll show you my notes here. 31-20. I think LSU wins this ball game. I think Florida will get its somewhat. LSU salts away the game a bit, as I just kind of alluded to, on the ground. I'm going under. And so I think this one will be played at a little bit higher scoring clip than your typical LSU-Florida game. But I don't think it's going to be an absolute barn burner. I don't think Florida has the capacity to keep up in a barn burner, but I give their defense more credit than anybody else LSU's played so far this season. Not too much credit. I still got LSU scoring 31 points. I just don't know that this is a game where LSU pops off for 40, even 50-plus. I don't know that that's quite in the cards, so I'm showing a little bit of respect toward the defense that's coming in from Gainesville, and I'm going with a different member of the secondary, Clint. Sink or swim, part three, LSU's defensive MVP in this game better be Grant Delpit, and it's time. That's the way I really feel. It's time. Last year, they strapped the number 7 on somebody who asked for it. It was a disaster. Jonathan Giles, the wide receiver transfer, he didn't fit that mold. I don't know that coming out of his sophomore season, anybody could have fit that mold more perfectly than Grant Delpit. You could argue Fournette, Matthew, Peterson. Yeah, those are some pretty bad mamma jammas. But Delpit just was dripping with swag coming out of his sophomore season. Unanimous All-American. Discussed as a top 5 to 6 pick overall, and I still think he'll get there. But you need to show everybody something on the field. LSU's number 7 in 2019 needs to play like a guy with his hair on fire. And I understand they've asked him to play a different type of safety role, right? It's not always kind of that roaming, swashbuckling, go where you want, see ball, find ball mentality. Yeah, when you have to play center field and you have to watch everybody six, that's a completely different game. He needs to play the type of game that suits him. If Kyle Trask and Florida are going to beat LSU deep down the field, good luck and God bless. I'd bet a lot of bones that they won't win it that way. I think it's time that Delpit is unleashed. And maybe, just maybe, some of that starts up top mentally. He needs to unleash himself. Play just uninhibited. Can't overthink it. See ball, hit ball, wouldn't be a bad thing for number seven at all. And so for me, I'm going to go with Grant Delpit as the game's MVP. I thought he was not only mediocre, maybe even subpar in LSU's last primetime game against Texas. It needs to be Oppo like Taco. I got Grant Delpit showing up in a big way and having one of those types of games that in April, when we're all watching the NFL draft and he gets drafted in the lottery, we're going to see a lot of clips, I think, from this LSU-Florida game. That's my prediction, CD.
I like that a lot, Ben. I like that a lot, especially with Grant Delpit, because I feel like he's a guy that I agree with you. I think he's the one that needs to step up the most, but I feel like still Derek Stingley Jr. needs a coming out party. I think this is one.
I think he's already started to have it, but he does it on a stage like this, no question. He'll further cement the legend that is 24 in the making. And so Stingley's talent isn't questioned by anybody, and for that matter, neither is Delpit's. But Stingley's had a lot better start to this 2019 campaign. No takers so far on a Friday. So Desmond Howard, he must have been wrong. He says that everybody starts drinking the brown liquor too early. Desmond, you thought you meant Saturday morning, bro. Apparently it's Friday afternoon.
Well, they started drinking brown liquor much earlier than other fans, especially when they tailgate. Yeah. So that's a very unfair advantage for LSU fans.
Don't know if we could play that clip enough. That was Desmond Howard earlier today in Baton Rouge. A bunch of reporters caught up with him, getting ready for ESPN College Game Day. The brown liquor, the consumption begins very early. CD, you got an update.
Yeah, and you brought up College Game Day. It's a almost perfect segue. We talked about earlier this week about the College Game Day picker.
Is it John Goodman?
Yes, it just became official just like about 10 seconds ago.
Mike Papajohn with an absolute trailer release.
He knows what he's doing.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
When somebody, like, I remember when Shady McCoy spoiled Avengers Endgame.
Yes.
And was, like, shamed off of Twitter. Michael Papajohn needs to be lifted on people's shoulders for this one. This is not a bad thing to spoil.
Oh, this is a great thing to spoil.
And so everybody's All-American. Gordy Rush joined the program yesterday. Told us he was actually living in the dorms in Tiger Stadium and would walk out of his dorm and watch Quaid and Goodman film this movie. He said back then, Quaid was not really a good guy. Since things have changed a little bit. So, you know, I'm usually a little bit more of a fan of the other Quaid, right? Come on now. Everybody loves Uncle, fill in the blank.
Ah, man, this is going to bug me. I can't believe it. This put me on the spot. I can't remember.
You came up with Everybody's All-American yesterday.
Yes.
Come on now.
This is going to bug me.
He's in the same movie with Clark W. Griswold.
Yep.
Come on now, Clint. You could do this. You could do it. I believe in you.
You believe in me.
3, 2, 1. I'm giving you no more time.
Okay.
Uncle Eddie. Come on, dude. You just got demoted. You were up on like level one, rung one of the ladder, and now you're back on ground level again. Uncle Eddie.
I got humbled there.
Alas, it's a different Quaid. And he starred and Everybody's All-American with John Goodman. And John Goodman will now officially be your celebrity guest picker. He'll be sitting next to Herbie and Corso and Desmond Howard and a bunch of people drinking brown liquor. And it's a beautiful time to be alive. All right, quick timeout. We'll be right back with more Bumper to Bumper Sports. And we'll be talking Houston Astros.
This show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield, but it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
An Altuve chant is going in the stands. Pagan delivers. And that's driven deep to left center field. Racing back, Kiermaier looking up. See you later! See you later! Back-to-back jacks! First Brantley, now Altuve. It's 6-1 Astros.
On fire at Minute Maid last night, and you don't have to give Garrett Cole much in the way of run support. Those back-to-back jacks, yep, that'll do it. The Astros into the ALCS. Want to dip into those waters? We'll keep talking LSU Florida with you as well. Chime in when you're ready. 706-0111. Clint, I was barraged during that break with text saying, Ben, it's not Uncle Eddie, it's Cousin Eddie. All right, that's fair. More commonly known as Cousin Eddie, but still, let's not kid ourselves, to Clark's kids. Probably still Uncle Eddie. Yeah, okay. It's a great movie. All the vacations, Christmas, European, otherwise. Absolutely fantastic. Clint just couldn't quite get it. It was on the tip of his tongue, and yet not quite there. But we did come in with Steve Sparks, Robert Ford, their call of the Astros over the Rays, Game 5 of the ALCS. I'm sorry, the ALDS. And now it's the championship series. And now, as I mentioned in the last segment, we've got a starting rotation. I'm a bit surprised. And, Clint, I'll get your 2 cents here. Greinke, Verlander, 1-2, Saturday, Sunday, to open this thing at Minute Maid. After a travel day, Garrett Cole will go in Game 3 in New York. Game 4 still to be determined. And I was under the impression that there wouldn't be enough rest for Verlander to start in Game 2. I'm a little surprised that we're seeing this. Again, he was just rushed back into production to get back for Game 4 of the ALDS. And so Verlander goes Game 1, Game 4, and then with fairly minimal rest time, he's going on Sunday. So I'm a little surprised that they're able to get away with this. And knowing how short rest worked for Verlander the first time out, they're going about it in a similar way. I know he's got an extra day this time around, but still, I don't know if you're getting 7 or 8-plus innings out of Verlander, as you might normally expect from him. I think this one might be a little different. And I suspect it's being done so that Verlander would be available for maybe a potential Game 6 outing. But still, for me, this one was a bit of a shock. I don't think anybody's surprised by the outcome, the fact that there are the two best teams in the American League still standing for the ALCS. We've been waiting on Yanks-Astros, I mean, it feels like since April or May. So now we've got it. I still like the Astros' chances due to home field advantage. I still like their starting rotation compared to the Yankees. I think they're a bit stretched out with that excellent starting staff because of the way that the ALDS shook out. I guess I'm not quite as downtrodden as I was after the Game 4 loss, because then the way that the numbers were adding up in my head, Clint, the type of rest that Verlander would be on, I thought, and I would have bet money, it would have been Verlander, Cole, Games 3 and 4 in New York. The fact that they're able to get away with JV in Game 2, that's a really big deal. I just hope he's the guy that might just be worthy of the Cy Young.
And they have to kind of put him in Game 2 and Game 3, Ben, because you got to think about what's going to happen if this, and it seems like it's expected to go to a 7-game series.
You say that they have to. I think that they want to.
Yeah. I mean, they have to in the sense of like preparing it so you have the setup for Game 6 and Game 7 of being Cole Verlander.
I get you, man. I get you. I just think there's a difference between what you want to happen, what you see as ideal, and then what you're, I don't know, man. I wish there was a little more breathing room for Verlander going into the start. But the reality, I guess, is this. The guy has a maximum of 4 starts left in his season. I think we can all say that out loud. 2 in the CS, 2 in the World Series. That's all that's possible. If he wants to throw it till it falls off and then regroup somehow, some way to make that money again in 2020, okay, that's fine. I just hope that he's able to pitch a little better this time around than he did. It wasn't a complete disaster, but the Game 4 start, that wasn't vintage Verlander. Otherwise, I'll take your pulse, Clint. How else are you feeling about the upcoming ALCS? Anything else that leads you to have more confidence than you normally would, more questions than you normally would?
I think I'm getting more confidence simply because of the fact that we're finally starting to see the hitting come together. And mind you, last night was just such a big difference for me because you saw them kind of get things going. It wasn't like, oh, hey, let's just hit bombs all the time. This was a game where in the first inning, I think they got like 6 or 7 hits going. It was just one after the other after the other. You do that, you can wind up winning ball games pretty consistently regardless of what kind of pitching staff you're facing off against.
I will let our listeners know this. We're going to air Astros versus the Yanks on one of our stations, either here on Acadian Sports Station or on our sister station, KVO The Rewind. We'll have every single game on one of those two throughout this postseason. When at all humanly possible, we're going to try and default right here to 103.7 The Game. That will not be possible tomorrow night. So again, Astros fans, you don't want to listen to the LSU game. You'd rather listen to the Stros try to take it back against the Yanks. We will have you covered, so just don't fear. 6:30 is your pregame show. Astro launch tomorrow night, 7:08, first pitch from Minute Maid Park. The Saturday game will be on the Rewind. That's 97.7 FM, 1330 AM. It's the same exact time on Sunday night. We'll bring it back here to Acadiana Sports Station. So again, 7:08 is your first pitch, Saturday for game one on the Rewind, Sunday for game two on Acadiana Sports Station. I'm looking forward to it, man. I really am. You have to salvage at least a split at home. If you can find a way to get this thing back to Minute Maid, even if you're down 3-2, as you just mentioned, if it's Verlander Cole, game 6 and 7 at home, you take your chances.
You have to. That's probably the best case scenario, to have those two guys in there to try and win you that pennant, because you know probably that other series in the NLCS is likely going to go 7 games as well, because it just feels
good.
It feels like the most unnatural of the series, just because the LCS felt like it was just destined to be this. Now we're sitting here looking at the NLCS starting tonight with the Cardinals and the Nationals. Who would have saw that coming?
You're well, as a Cardinals fan, I had it all along, right? Yeah, okay. I know that you'll enjoy this. Way back in the day, I'm starting to show my age a little bit. This is before Jacob Hester with those fourth down conversions that we aired for you earlier. Early 2000s. Bill Simmons, still a member of the mothership and writing for Page Two.
Yeah.
Way back in the gap, my friend.
You have to go to the Wayback Machine for those things.
He has an ongoing theory. It's called the Ewing Theory. When you subtract the best player from a team and suddenly the team gets better without him, well, maybe the chemistry improved, you stopped hogging the ball, all these things. And it came from the fact that Patrick Ewing got injured in, what was it, 98? And in the lockout season, the Knicks went all the way to the NBA Finals. I'm going to throw out some Ewing theory for the Nationals and Bryce Harper. Subtract him from the team, get him bloated on that salary to Philly, and look at the Nats. Finally win a playoff series without Bryce Harper. You got to enjoy that. Hey, I think you'll enjoy this. Before we get to our one final word, Clint, you're begging for it, and darn it, it's not a bad idea. With the confirmed news this hour that John Goodman will be the celebrity guest picker on College Game Day tomorrow morning on the Mothership, how about a few from the Big Lebowski? If you're going to go bowling with John Goodman, watch the foot placement.
Over the line!
Smokey, this is not Nom. This is bowling. There are rules.
Hey. This is not Nom, Smokey. This is bowling. There are rules. Mark it a zero. He's over the line. All right, get us with our final word, CD.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Voice. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Questionable. We learned earlier this afternoon, maybe about 90 minutes ago, Saints running back Alvin Kamara questionable for the game Sunday at Jacksonville with an ankle injury. AK-41 first appeared on the Saints injury report yesterday. He was not at practice today. Sean Payton declined to elaborate more, but he remains questionable for the game. Whether or not he travels tomorrow with the team is yet to be determined. If he does travel, it'll be a game-time decision. If he doesn't, well, I think we have our answer. Who saw that coming? Questionable, the final word of this hour, and it's brought to you by the Village Station. We're coming right back and bringing Justin Vincent with us. More LSU Florida talk. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It is time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one. We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
And now let's get started.
We are off and running. Hour 2 of 3 underway. And at this point, the LSU-Florida game is just coursing through our veins. Bumper to Bumper Sports, right back in on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love, joined by the famous Clint D. It's Friday. It's 5 o'clock. You know what time it is. Let's get out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Former LSU Tiger national champ, Justin Vincent, our guest. JV, how you feeling?
I'm doing good. How are you guys?
Life is good here. We had Jacob Hester on about an hour ago. Where were you during that fourth down game in 2007?
I was in Pittsburgh.
I thought so.
I was in Pittsburgh. Yeah, I was in Pittsburgh, and probably, I think it's a place called Fatheads. I remember watching it and just wondering what was going through Les's mind, going for a fourth down, but we ended up converting it, so the rest is history.
Your time at LSU, obviously the 0-3 game against Florida didn't go the Tigers' way, but the rest of the season certainly did. From there forth, what do you remember about that game and what makes this rivalry so special?
For me personally, that was my first time I actually got some action as a running back at LSU. In the prime time game, Joe and Tyrone went down. They had one of my teammates that I played with in Pittsburgh, Keewon Ratliff, Channing Crowder, who I played against, I was in Miami. It was just the atmosphere. I don't know what it is, and the hate's always been there way before I got to LSU. Maybe because just the things that happened in the past, but you know, just something about them and their fans. I think their fans are probably more the cause of the hate than they are the team itself. But it's just something that'll probably be going on after I've gone from here. But it's something that you kind of can't put your finger on. I don't know what it is, man, but they just don't like each other, and I kind of like it.
As we break down the X's and O's, I think there are a lot of places where LSU has advantages in this game, Justin. One place where I'm just not quite as sure, LSU's O-line doing a bit of shuffling, Charles coming back at left tackle. I know that Ed Ingram is healthy. He won't start at left guard. How do you think this LSU O-line holds up against a pretty darn good Florida D-line?
I think they'll do good, man. I think that will cater to their needs as far as getting the ball out of Joe's hand quickly, not putting a lot of pressure on them, not actually going to do a lot. I think we'll go out there with that game plan. Obviously, last week was a little different. We slowed it down. I did a lot of check with Mies. I think we'll have a lot of set plays this week, get the ball out of Joe's hand, let the receivers make plays. We'll run the ball when we need to. But we'll kind of alleviate some of that pressure on them and not make them hold blocks as long.
Talking with Justin Vincent, doing a great job as a development officer for the Tiger Athletic Foundation. Defensively, I made the point in hour number one, this for me has to be Grant Delpit's reminder to everybody that he's the baddest dude on the field. Are they doing some things right now with the secondary that could allow him to maybe do that?
Yeah, I think so. I think he'll float down in the box a little bit more this week, give him an opportunity to do a little bit of blitzing, get him off the edge a little bit. You know, Grant, I think he's more, in my mind, he's more of a strong safety than he necessarily is a free safety. I think that he does well when he's in the box. He does well when he's out in space as well. But I think from what we saw last year, all that came from when he was down at about 7 to 10 yards deep, and he made people recognize that he was a force to be reckoned with. So I think that they'll give him an opportunity to get down in the box, make some plays, cover some tight ends, cover receivers when he has to, and send him off the edge.
Put into words, JV, the difference that having Divinity and Chaseon back at linebacker means, and even the guys up front, Rashard Lawrence looks healthy. Glenn Logan could even play. What difference does that make?
Yeah, just some veterans. You know what I mean? Just having guys that's been out there and know the landscape of that matchup and know what it means to have experience. Not saying that any of those young, not saying that any of those young guys can do well. But I also think that they have an opportunity to get those guys back and get them some much-needed reps after having some time off and let them heal up. I think that'll give us an advantage on the back end and get that young man to throw some balls up and let our defensive backs go to work.
We continue to hear all week long, Justin, that Kyle Trask hasn't started a game on the road since maybe his sophomore year of high school. What do you think that atmosphere is like for somebody who hasn't been in that in so long?
I mean, to be honest with you, I can't even put that in words. I'm kind of flabbergasted, to be honest with you, when I think about it, just to say that that guy hasn't started a football game in so long and then his first road start is in Death Valley. I mean, you don't wish bad things to happen to people, but I mean, golly, the deck is kind of stacked against this young man if you look at it at that aspect. But, you know, I hope our fans come oiled up, man, and come ready to to give the Florida Gators all they can handle and let our boys go out there and do some work. But I think it's going to be tough for him, man, and hopefully they prove me right.
I want you to hear something, and Clint, I'll get you to play this right now. I want you to hear something that Desmond Howard had to say about a couple hours ago on campus. This is fantastic. He was asked about what makes this such a difficult place to play and how the fans make an impact.
Well, they started drinking brown liquor much earlier than other fans, especially when they tailgate. Yeah. So that's a very unfair advantage for LSU fans.
Isn't that amazing?
That is, listen. But you know what's funny, though? Obviously, Desmond being a northern, Northern Michigan, he knows. He's been down here enough over the years, experienced Death Valley, experienced the fans, experienced the atmosphere. He knows, man. Listen, that's like drinking orange juice in the morning for these folks down there. You know what I mean? So it's a thing that everybody's ready to go, and I think they'll have an opportunity, being a night game, and we've been chomping at the bit for having won so long since we had a day game after day game. And, you know, it's something that obviously you know way better than I, because you got LSU before I did, obviously, but you know what it means to have a night game in Death Valley. So I'm excited, especially with this matchup and all the what's on the line.
I'll tell you what else is kind of unique about LSU Florida, and it really, I think, kind of became a thing under Les Miles. All of the fake punts and especially the fake field goals and the ball going over the head of the holder. When you think back on all the times that happened, and I remember being field level in 2010 when it bounced, I think, to Colby Delahousse. How crazy is that?
Yeah, I mean, literally, I mean, obviously, anybody who knows Coach Miles, and obviously I spent a lot of intimate time with him as far as, you know, being a player to being on staff. You know, he doesn't care, man. He lets it all hang out. And he's like, you know, we live or die by the sword. And, you know, that's what you got to love about him. I mean, doing those type of things in those type of games with those implications on the line, that means you're willing to do whatever it takes to be successful, and I'm all for it. And if it works, obviously, you're a guy in a lot of people's eyes. If it doesn't work, you're an idiot. So it's damn if you do, damn if you don't. But, you know, I'm all for it when it works, of course.
Another few moments with Justin Vincent on 103.7 The Game. You mentioned you spent a lot of time in those rooms with Les Miles and that LSU coaching staff. What makes Dan Mullen such a great offensive mind?
You know, he's found ways to put guys who a lot of people in the country thought that weren't adequate enough to be on their ball clubs. You know, Tim Tebow came out of high school. He's almost like a Dak Prescott. They were kind of the same person. They played a lot of stuff. They were big, could have been a tight end, could have been a flex guy, could play defense if they wanted to. He found a way to make that young man very successful, win national championships, you know, 10-plus wins a season. He knows what to do. You know, he knows how to work his magic. But, you know, as far as the magic goes, I don't know how much magic he can sprinkle on trash to have him prepared for what's going to happen to him on Saturday, especially in that atmosphere.
Hey, we're going to finish up on the high school tip. I know you went to watch STM Catholic. What a game. And Jack Besh is a freak.
Yes, he is, man. You know, I saw him when he was really young. Obviously, Blaine's older brother, Marty, that's his son. And, dude, I mean, it's kind of amazing. You really don't understand how big these kids are until, you know, you're down on the field after the game and, you know, you see him and stuff. So we're down on the field after the game. And I was just like, my goodness, man, why is this kid so big? And why is the rest of these kids so big? I don't remember a kid being that big when I was in high school. I seriously don't. But he's definitely a great athlete, man. Has a good head on his shoulders, has grace to match. So I'm looking for some good things to happen to him in the coming future, but hopefully he can be a Tiger.
Hey, let's wrap up with your alma mater, Barb, taking on Sam Houston tonight in the Chuck. What do you expect?
Oh, man, it's going to be awesome, man. That place is going to be packed to the gills because Chad Falk, who I played with at Barb, he was the song singer for us. He was the offensive coordinator at Barb for years, and now he's the head coach at Sam Houston. It's going to be a battle. You know, he's been coached under Coach Mike Cottrell over there at Barb, so it's gonna be packed, man. It's gonna be a lot of split homes tonight going to the stadium tonight, but I'm excited about it and the opportunity for those young men. But hopefully Barb comes out on top.
I love it. Justin, just checking here. Did you know that when you Wikipedia yourself that the picture of you is playing Barb football?
It is. I saw it the other day, man. Somebody screenshotted me. I looked like I was miserable in that photo. I'm going to try to find somebody to change it. I'm going to change it myself.
It's not a bad look. I'm just saying it's you from literally about 16 years ago. But, hey, man, you're doing your thing then.
I know, man. I'm very fortunate, very blessed to have zero regrets. And that place is always special to me. It's allowed me to do a lot of things in my life that I probably thought I couldn't achieve, man. But, I owe a lot of success to people at Ball Lives, but not only coaches, but the teachers as well.
Hey, keep flying high with the Tiger Athletic Foundation and enjoy tomorrow night. We'll catch up next Friday.
Thanks, man. Be good.
Justin Vincent. Bit of an extended run there. Got him a little longer than normal because, well, he, kind of like me, loves high school football. He was just a lot better at it than I was. But he watched a whale of a game from Cougar Stadium last Friday night, talking about getting eye level, not just with Jack Besh, but so many of those players. High school football players weren't that big when I was doing it. And, you know, I'll take exception to one other thing, Clint. Justin knows me, right? So he knows that I grew up in Baton Rouge. So maybe what he meant there when he said that you got to LSU before me is that he knew that I was going to LSU games from a young age. But I almost took that as you got to LSU before me. All right, well, no, number one, I didn't go to LSU, and I think he knows that. But number two, dude, you're a year older than I am, right? So I don't want to hear that from you. You got there before me. I remember your redshirt year, okay? And then 03 was your coming out party. You are a year older than me. So technically, you got there before I did.
That's the best. I'm not going to lie. I mean, that and the fact that I'm
old man, you.
The fact that his Buccaneer High School football photos is on his Wikipedia page.
I wouldn't have wanted to tackle that guy. Seriously, go Wikipedia, Justin Vincent.
I'm going to do
it in
the break.
Him wearing a Bar Buck uniform. It's just a sweet look. It's a sweet interview, too. Glad we got him on prior to LSU Florida. Jacob Hester, Justin Vincent. It's been a great show so far. If you are listening and you played running back at LSU, we'll squeeze you in the next segment. Otherwise, we're talking Saints football. After a brief timeout, we'll be right back in with more Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
This show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield, but it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Back in 19 minutes after 5 o'clock, we have reached the portion of the show where Clint just can't help himself. I probably have been a little heavy-handed with the Desmond Howard clip because it's freaking phenomenal. LSU fans get started early drinking the brown liquor. That's why there's a home field advantage. Desmond, you ain't wrong. We've aired that out a few times. Clint, you had a couple of spot plays of John Goodman, but ultimately, we're only two men. We're busy. We're doing a 2.5-hour live sports talk radio show. By the way, the number one sports talk radio show in Louisiana. All right, done. I can only probably say that for a few more months. Moscona might just take it back, so I'll just pimp that while I can. But nonetheless, we're busy here. The LSU videography staff, they're busy in Baton Rouge. And here's what they came up with. The video accompaniment's pretty darn good. But we'll give you the audio because it's special too. John Goodman announced as the special celebrity game picker for College Game Day tomorrow morning. And here's how LSU commemorates it.
Yeah, that's right. I'm bad.
I don't believe I ordered a wake-up call, Mikey. Over the line!
We can't put it off till the weekend?
No, Dan, it's tonight.
Oh, name it.
Hey, Chip, how's it going?
Well, I guess that's a tragedy right there.
Grown man with a cat. Is that part of your act?
You need somebody who's a somebody to put their name on it.
I'm a man of large appetite.
I'm a man of large appetite, Clint. That could describe just about, I don't know, anyone in South Louisiana.
Exactly. And with John Goodman, I mean, and he brought up LSU's videography crew. I mean, I'm sure these guys got the drop from Michael Papa John before he dropped the dime on everybody else. So they had plenty of time to kind of piece this bad boy together.
Yeah, Michael Papa John did have this thing. He's got those Hollywood connects and the LSU connects,
yep.
Frankly. He's just a unique beast that was, I mean, specially designed to break this kind of news. And he did so unofficially a couple of days ago. All right, enough of the LSU Florida, at least for a few moments. We'll have Sharif Ishak aboard in 20 minutes. So we'll get a live scene setter from New Orleans. Saints will travel tomorrow toward Jacksonville for a noon Sunday game. And we're not sure yet if they'll be traveling with Alvin Kamara. The news came out maybe 90 minutes ago, Kamara officially questionable for that game at Jacksonville. An ankle injury. He popped up on the Saints injury designation list yesterday. He was not at practice at all today. And head coach Sean Payton really kind of declined to further elaborate. But there have been a number of national reporters, their sources telling them that this isn't an overly serious thing, that it's more precautionary. I'll tell you what's interesting, Clint. The Saints are winning games without Drew Brees. I don't want to test the waters of if they can win games without Alvin Kamara. I would have told you before the season started, Drew Brees is as singularly important to his team than maybe anybody in all of the NFL. I'm finding out that the Saints had a better team around him than maybe I even gave them credit for, and I'm willing to admit that. I don't want to see what happens without Alvin Kamara. If it is Latavius Murray and then anything else that you can shuffle on out there, boy, those would be slim pickings, and boy, then you're going to have to see Teddy Bridgewater throw it about 45 times a game. So if having Kamara straight with that ankle for weeks 7 or 8 through means sitting him for Jacksonville, if that's the decision to be made, I am more than for it. I am all for it.
And that's going to be amazing to see what's going to happen if Alvin Kamara isn't there. Just seeing what's going to happen with Teddy Bridgewater.
Amazing is not the word I would use, but go ahead.
No, but what I mean to say is it'll be amazing to see if the Saints can wind up getting a win without Alvin Kamara and Drew Brees. Because I agree with you. I think it's more because Alvin Kamara has opened up a side of the Saints that we hadn't seen in a while. Yes, Mark Ingram was able to get things done, but I feel like Alvin Kamara, he was such a almost a Swiss Army knife, if you will, in terms of a running back. He's able to get it done.
Funny that you would use that moniker.
Yeah.
Because now we use that moniker to describe
Taysom Hill.
And I was going to semi-jokingly, semi-not, bring up the idea that maybe if Kamara can't go, hell, just put 7 at running back. You ask him to do everything else. I mean, just put him at running back. I don't think they would actually do that.
No, they wouldn't.
And shame on me. You know what? Gun to my head right now. If you told me I had to name Saints running backs after Kamara and Murray, okay, I use gun to my head. So basically my life is over. I couldn't tell you who else played. Daniel Lasco, who they got from Cal in a draft 2 years ago, is he still around?
I don't know. I think he might be in the XFL draft pool. That's all.
I genuinely don't know any running backs on the depth chart after Kamara and Murray. So shame on me. I would fail that test. And let's go ahead and take the gun away from my head metaphorically because I don't like my chances there with surviving that roulette game. All right, so yeah, he's paramount to their chances to do everything they want to do this season. I'm okay with sitting him in this game if that's what's on the line, if those are the ramifications. So, again, Alvin Kamara and, for that matter, Latavius Murray not at practice today. Sean Payton clarified that with Murray, it's not injury-related. Everything's good in the hood there. He'll play Sunday at Jacksonville. Kamara may not. In fact, when we get Sharif Eichek aboard less than 20 minutes from now, I'll ask him if Kamara is expected to even travel, right? That's going to give us, I mean, it's kind of like a gatekeeper thing. You got to get past the gate. You got to travel to be able to be a game time decision. So we'll find out. But there's a bit of mystery this thing is clouded in right now in New Orleans. Otherwise, Saints still go in 1-point underdogs to take on the Jacksonville Jaguars. The Jags starting to get a little bit of swagger back. Leonard Fournette ran amok a couple of weeks ago in Denver. DJ Chark continues to be one of the breakout players in the NFL this year. Gardner Minshew, his magical mustache, has Jacksonville captivated. Vegas must know something that we don't, because this one still seems to me to be a game that the Saints have every opportunity to win in. Without Kamara, things start to get interesting. Latavius Murray is going to have a turn back the clock, Oakland Raiders style Latavius Murray game.
Exactly. And the only other person on the Saints roster that is designated as a running back is going to be Dwayne Washington, a 4-year pro.
That's the guy who used to play for the New York Jets, I believe.
It sounds about right.
You're just guessing.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
That was an educated guess on my part, but you just threw it out there to placate me.
I guess.
I could have said, that's the guy with the Montreal Alouettes. You just said, yeah, probably so.
He played for the Lions, so we were way off.
Who am I thinking of? I'll figure that out all fair. I was thinking of a Washington that played running back for the Jets and was more of a scat back. So I was wrong. He might as well have played for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. Neither of us had one inkling who the hell Dwayne Washington was. You may find out who Dwayne Washington is on Sunday. And I'm telling you, again, if it's for the long-term safety, security, and health of AK-41, fine. We'll all learn who Dwayne Washington is. All right, on the other side of this break, you'll learn who we're throwing shade at today. In fact, we're not actually throwing it. We're going to tell stories from a couple of guys who don't play college football currently, but they both have a bone to pick with the organization and some of those who run it. Sharif Aishak joins us at 5:45, and then football night in Acadiana pregame style with RP3 at 6 o'clock. Do not go anywhere. After a brief timeout, we'll be back with more Bumper to Bumper Sports. Here we go, back in another half hour of B2BS, and then we continue on with a Friday football theme. Football night in Acadiana. It'll be here before you know it, 6 until 6:30. Yeah, we've had a lot of fun so far. Not one, but two national championship running backs from LSU football. I'd say it's been a pretty large program. A couple of guys who know a thing or two about the Tigers beating the Gators. Our thanks to Jacob Hester and Justin Vincent. But it's not all rosy. Every single day on this program, we get to throw shade. Now, sometimes we make it a little cutesy. Sometimes we have fun. But let's keep it 100. I think shade is thrown optimally on this program when it's pointed at somebody. Not that we always like to do the chucking. Sometimes we just like reporting that others are doing so. And with that in mind, let me issue your daily reminder. It's a PSA locally on a Friday. That no one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to their website, patiocenter.com, and check out the retractable shades and screens. The standing seam metal awnings, but understand that's just the tip of the iceberg. The inventory, they're not limited there. They've got vision at Patio Center. And when they sit down with you, top down, starting with the manager, Mark, you're going to figure out exactly what they could do for you. And then they'll do it for you prior to the Super Bowl. Maybe the Saints will go marching into that bad boy in early February, and you'll have the baddest patio on your block. That dream, it becomes a reality. But only when you start with a trip to the website, patiocenter.com. The kings of customization, it's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
A twofer today, CD, and both of them are jabs taken somehow, some way at college football by people that now technically are no longer playing college football. First, and this was seen late yesterday afternoon on the West Coast, the Los Angeles Rams doing pretty standard Thursday press conference stuff. Todd Gurley, go Dawgs. He's out there giving his interview. Clint, I know you saw this. The man is wearing a concocted T-shirt that says NCAA vertically. But the acronym that's spray painted on this shirt, not concerned about athletes. He didn't just slip into that shirt. That wasn't Anthony Davis saying somebody else dresses me with the That's All Folks shirt. This was definitely an intentional message. And some not-so-subtle shade from Todd Gurley.
It's amazing to see that. I saw the alert pop up last night. I was like, oh, my God, Todd Gurley all out with the not concerned with athletes. That's amazing.
And it's kind of like he channeled his inner Dwayne The Rock Johnson. I got to be honest with you. I watched the show Ballers on HBO. Yeah. I don't get more than 48 hours from when it's released on Sunday night, and I've seen it. I'm current right now. He's literally doing The Rock's move from the entire show, Ballers, is trying to take down the NC2A. All right, I'll shuffle over to another interesting storyline, and I don't even remotely have time to read this entire tweet thread to you. You'll just have to take my word on this. Justin Murphy, former UCLA football player, former Texas Tech football player, and now, within the last couple of days, former University of Houston student-athlete. He went on a Twitter rant for the ages, in which he starts by saying, according to sources, I am no longer a part of the 2019 Houston Cougar football senior class. He went on and on, a text thread that was literally, I think, about 19 texts long or tweets long. God, Clint, I'm in that millennial age, but still I forget how to describe it sometimes. But it was impressive, and Murphy laid out the fact that he's had X number of knee surgeries and surgeries in general, that Houston, after losing Sunday night, Labor Day weekend to Oklahoma, ended up playing four games in the next 19 days. One of them, of course, that loss at Tulane. They started their season 1-3, at which point first-year head coach Dana Holgorsen solicited at least four upperclassmen, several of them grad transfers, and asked them if they would take a red shirt to help the rebuilding process for the program. I'm not here to tell you that is or isn't heinous. A couple of the guys, according to Murphy, took the bait and took the deal. A couple did not. Murphy, after, with all kinds of exhaustive detail, describing what's happened to him injury-wise, what's happened to the Houston football team. He accuses the entire program of tanking, of moving in for the future. And he says when he went in to explain some of these things, again, this is just his side of the story. I certainly understand that. But when he told his story on Twitter, he says he finally got face-to-face with Dana Holgorsen, at which point he said Holgorsen didn't even look up from his computer monitor, said, "I don't have time to talk. I only have time to coach." Murphy then called him out, said, "You make $3.4 million a year to go along with a $300,000 base salary. You think you might have a better outlook for a player that's contributing to your compensation?" And he just ends it with, "At Holgorsen Dana." That's my window dressing, but you need to go and actually peep in the store. That entire thing is worth looking at. Again, it's one perspective. It's one person's side of the story. He throws a lot more than shade. He throws some pretty heavy accusations. And suddenly, a guy who's played at three Power 5 programs, well, he's being followed by every major reporter on college football in the country. I don't think we've seen the end of this one. And it's not exactly a great look for another Group of Five head coach, Dana Holgorsen in Houston.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
Very, very interesting. All show long, just about all we've been concerned about, understandably, LSU, Florida, we've sprinkled in. Astros, again, you're just joining us. A.J. Hinch has said his rotation is Greinke, Verlander, Cole, and then Taco Bell Anderson. TBA, game four in the Bronx. I'm surprised by that. I'm not surprised there will be enough time to get Garrett Cole in for game three. After all, you've got a rest day to travel between the two this weekend, Saturday and Sunday night at Minute Maid, and Tuesday's game three from the Bronx. I am surprised about the Verlander game two part. Fairly short rest again after coming off short rest already, and that not going exceedingly well at Tropicana Field. So, interesting. The Astros lining up against the Yankees. They've got home field advantage. We'll see if the rotation is right to get back to the World Series second time in 3 years. We've also talked some about the New Orleans football Saints. And boy, is there an intriguing storyline going on with Alvin Kamara and that ankle. We're going to take you down to New Orleans on the side of this break to wrap up today's program. Sharif Ishak, WDSU, will share the latest. I promise you don't want to miss that. So stick around. We're going to take a timeout, and then we'll be back with more Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
High school football is oh so close. LSU football just a touch further away. And then on the other side of that, Saints looking to win another game with Teddy Bridgewater at the helm. As we're back in one final time on the program today, you know we have to get a live scene setter, not from Jacksonville, but from the Big Easy. So let's get out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Time for our boy, Sharif Ishak, WDSU-TV. Sharif, how goes it on a Friday?
Hey, what's going on, Ben? Germantown, how are you?
I feel good. I'd feel better if Alvin Kamara were completely healthy. We've given the update on the show, but I'll let you tell our listeners exactly what you learned over on Airline Drive earlier this afternoon.
Well, this all, you know, all came about yesterday, actually. Yeah, he came up on the Thursday injury report as limited with an ankle injury, and Fletcher told me he saw him in the locker room Wednesday. They asked to talk to him in the locker room. He politely declined and said he had a meeting, and he was just fine Wednesday. So I might have, you know, tweaked something Thursday at practice. I mean, but would be my best guess. And then he didn't practice today's practice, so that's what, you know, triggered them to put him as questionable. Sure, he'll make the trip, and I'm sure it'll be close to game-time decision if he plays. Now, of course, if he doesn't make the trip, well, you know, he's not going to play. My gut tells me, like, it's going to be there in Jacksonville, and sure, it'll be a game-time decision if he tweaked it. I'm sure he'll test it out on the field Sunday morning before the game even kicks off. But, yeah, it's just kind of crazy that it happened. Could have happened Thursday before, like, earlier in the Thursday practice before the media got a chance to go in there and view it, or it could have happened right after. So, you know, just a weird situation for AK-41, you know, to tweak an ankle in practice. But, you know, it can happen, man. You can tweak anything in practice.
See, I think it's ongoing, and I'll explain. Sharif Aishak with us on 103.7 The Game. The news, of course, Alvin Kamara, Saints running back, officially listed as questionable for the ball game in Jacksonville. For what it's worth, Latavius Murray also didn't practice today, but I know that's been since, I guess, specified by Sean Payton as not injury-related, so he should be good to go. My theory is this. He didn't look completely 100% to me and wasn't moving at 100% full speed in that Bucs game Sunday. And I know sometimes he makes it look easy with his skill and athleticism. He looked like he was throttling it back a little bit. So I wonder if this isn't something that maybe, Sharif, he's been dealing with for a while. We know the workload's been pretty insane this season.
Yeah, he has had a pretty major workload. He's touched the ball over close to 20 times or more in each game so far this season. And Latavius Murray hasn't really touched the ball that much. So, yeah, it's been another heavy workload, just kind of like last season when Mark Ingram was suspended the first four games. And it may be a little bit of that, and maybe a little bit of, hey, he might have landed funny or weird on one of his one of the plays last week. There were a couple of hits that he took after running or catching a ball, and it looked like he took a funky hit. And I'm like, oof, it didn't look pretty, man. And or it just could have been he tweaked it. And he tweaked it running the ball, or just did something funny in practice. But it could be a combination of both, you know, a lot of carries and touches. I mean, it happens that way, or it just got tweaked. I mean, it's probably a combination of both, but we'll see Sunday when they play.
All right, let's go big picture here, Sharif. How in the world is this game a one-point favorite in favor of Jacksonville? How did that happen? What does Vegas see that we don't?
Vegas probably saw that there was something wrong with Alvin Kamara. Maybe you saw
you guys
saw something together earlier in that Buccaneers game. But yeah, it's still, even if Kamara has to play, it's still a little fishy to me that they're 1-point underdogs going to Jacksonville. And Jacksonville's not a bad football team. Man, they're pretty solid. I know their defense got ripped up a little bit by Kyle Allen, but they have a pretty decent offense with the 1-2 and even 3 punch of Fournette. DK Chark and Gardner Minshew. Minshew has played well. I mean, he's thrown for close to 1,300 yards, completed 66% of his passes, and only had one interception. And he's mobile. And that's a big reason why I'm sure that they're 1-point favorites in the game. So, you know, I mean, they've played well so far this season. I mean, it's not like they're getting blown out by teams, and I still think they're a good ball club. And I'm sure they take a lot of factor into the Jalen Ramsey stuff, not having their best defensive player out there, and, you know, today he said, you know, still his back doesn't feel right, so even though the owner said he's likely to play, we'll see if he even plays Sunday. And so that's another, you know, drama right there that, you know, just can't be solved and seem like he doesn't want to be there. So, I mean, they're a decent football team, and regardless of who's healthy and who's not, I think it's just a good football team. They're playing a home game, and they haven't played at home in a while, so I'm sure their backs are against the wall, and I'm sure that's why they're 1-point favorites.
You led me right to a talking point. A couple of different skill position players you referenced on offense, both former LSU Tigers. Which one should this defense under Dennis Allen maybe be more concerned with? Is it DJ Chark on the outside or all kinds of up the middle and, you know, occasionally to the outside with Leonard Fournette?
Well, I think it's DJ Chark just because Gardner Minshew is, you know, liable to break the pocket, you know, and Chark keeping that, you know, play alive by getting behind the secondary. So that's always scary whenever you have a scrambling quarterback who can keep plays alive and his receiver falling around. So it's always, you know, always a tough task to stay with speedy receivers who can, you know, keep up with the quarterback. I just think DJ Chark's having a really good year. He's tough, man. He's tough to contain, especially if he slides behind you. He's got the speed, and we saw it quite a few times at LSU. Fournette, he's first in the AFC in rushing, third in the NFL. Sheldon Rankin says he's got that, you know, next level speed. If you don't get him at the line, he breaks free. Good luck trying to catch him. It's going to be a foot race. And it just seems like he's more focused this season. Ben, he's, seems like he's got it on, got it together, and he's doing his best, you know, to keep that offense going, as a one-two punch. So, you know, both of them are scary, but in my like humble opinion, I don't know if it's humble, I'd probably go with DJ Chark because of, you know, his speed and his ability to catch the ball down the field. And we know speedy receivers are pretty tough for the Saints.
Not so humble opinion. I like that. Our guest, the one and only Sharif Eishak, WDSU-TV in New Orleans. And let's go off beat for a moment. I got to tell you, the other two guests we've had in this show, Jacob Hester, Justin Vincent, we couldn't find another LSU running back, so we came to you. But I do want to know what you think about LSU-Florida this weekend.
I think LSU covers the spread. I just think LSU's on a mission. I think they're tired of hearing about how they went to the Swamp last season and lose 27-19 and had a terrible offense. Now, Florida does have a very good defense. You know, they are physical. They create turnovers. They're the top red zone defense in the entire country. But on the other side of the ball, LSU is the number one ranked offense, red zone offense in the country. So it's something got to give. But, man, I like the way Joe Burrow is playing. I think the offensive line is going to play even better this week. They're going to have to be up for that challenge because they can get after the quarterback, that defensive line. But I just think that, you know, the defense for LSU is going to make the difference because Trask is 100%. I know they'll probably use Emory Jones. They'll probably switch up the guys, but I just think the LSU defense is going to be ready. They're going to pounce on that Florida offense. I think they're going to create a few turnovers. They're going to make a difference in the ball game, which should, you know, give that offense some points.
LSU's defense being the difference, that would be a great storyline to come back to on Monday. We'll bounce back over to the Saints another moment or two with Sharif Eishak. Tougher road game for the Saints. Is it at the Jags this Sunday or next Sunday late afternoon at Chicago?
I'm going to go to Chicago, man. Chicago, I mean, I think both of them are tough just because you don't know what's going on with Kamara's injury. Don't play them that often. Gardner Minshew, he's an issue. But, man, Chicago, that defense,
yep,
tough. I know Oakland scored on him, but, you know, anytime you have Khalil Mack on the other side, staring at your quarterback, it's not Drew Brees, it's always going to be tough. That's a tough one for me. You know what? I'm going to go Jacksonville, because their backs are against the wall. They're going to have, like, I don't know, hearing like close to 50 of their old players celebrating 25 years of the franchise and, you know, Minshew mania. They're giving out 35,000 mustaches for the game. They're going to be pumped. They're going to be going crazy. First home game in a few weeks. So, yeah, I'm going to go Jacksonville. I think that game is going to be a lot tougher than the Chicago game.
I didn't know that, dude. I didn't realize this was going to be a bring back the magic type game, 25-year anniversary. So, like, Mark Brunell and company all just invade Jacksonville?
Fred Taylor, you know, Brunell. I can't really name that many more guys.
Yeah.
Funny thing, I do have a Jacksonville Jaguars pullover jacket from, like, the first year they played. So, there you go. There's a little tidbit for you.
How many Jags can you name from 25 years ago? Sharif and I just got through about, like, four. How about the offensive lineman, Bocelli? Boom. Make it five.
Boom. There you go. I mean, Fred Taylor and Mark Brunell are probably the only two I can remember. You probably know more than I do.
Fred Taylor has been balling so long, he's got a kid that's now doing it. Jimmy Smith, the wide receiver. We're up to six. Now I got to wind down the interview before we start talking too much Jags. Sharif, I appreciate you doing this. Enjoy your Friday night.
All right, Ben.
There it is. Sharif Eishak, WDSU-TV. Update, his personal opinion on Alvin Kamara. Not, I guess, completely in stone that he'll travel with the team tomorrow, but Sharif seems to think he will. It will be a game-time decision. Looks like on the other side, similar for Jalen Ramsey, lead cornerback and one of the best CBs in the National Football League for Jacksonville. So we still have a lot up in the air for this game. What we do know is that Teddy B will be back at quarterback. They were shouting his name in New Orleans last week. We'll see if they're shouting anything different at him at the TV this coming Sunday. Big program so far today. Got to shout out Jacob Hester, Justin Vincent, and you just heard from Sharif Eishak. The fun ain't done yet. RP3 coming in. We got football night in Acadiana. on the other side. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7TheGame.com.